Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
We're deep in our discussion of the Michigan Wolverines of early years under Fielding Yost, the great coach, with Dr. John Behe and his great biography on Coach Yost. We're going to learn more from Dr. Behe in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we, once again, we're going to go into our conversation we had recently with Dr. John Behe on his great book, Coach Yost, Michigan's Tradition Maker. You can find that book, Behe.com. It's Behe.com. And Dr. John has some great lines of communication to get you through some vendors that are selling this book. It's outstanding. I read it. It is a must read for football historians out there, especially lovers of, you know, the early football and some of the brilliant minds of football like Coach Fielding Yost. So make sure you get that. And in our conversation, our first parts of one and two, and if you haven't listened to either one of them yet, or maybe one or the other, go back and listen to them, because Dr. Behe has such interesting insight into Coach Yost. Fielding Yost is such an interesting subject to talk about and to read about, so make sure you do that. And in earlier, we talked about, you know, in part one, his early life, how he developed into becoming a lover of football, a player, an early coach, some of his early assignments as coach. And then we got into part two, a little bit about, you know, his winning ways. He caught on and was winning right away, you know, Stanford, Michigan, and just dominating teams that his team played, that Michigan played and Stanford played, and he was really developing a good routine. Well, now we're going to get into Dr. Behe's conversation on how Coach Yost motivated his players and made them truly one of the best teams in football history. And we'll get into that here. Here's Dr. Behe.
As I went through this research, I could see this guy, Coach Yost, and his trainer, Keen Fitzpatrick, who was a world-class track coach. I could see them building the mental side of it as they went along. And when Yost started teaching skills, they were not going to be doing them correctly or perfectly at all. And they might get discouraged. You know how self people can be their own worst enemies, find their mistakes and beat themselves up for them. And he would never let that happen. Never let that happen. And just continued the belief that you not only are going to get it, you're going to get it far better than anyone you play against. He will demonstrate to them how smart a guy you are and how tough you are. I mean, he continually built that self-confidence so that eventually it was easy for people who played Michigan. There's a lot of points scored here. I just given you what they did in 1901 and 1905. They had swagger. I mean, they were so dominating that, you know, they could see the opponents as they began to crack and collapse. Even the really big games, but they knew eventually they would break the will of the opponents. They are so smart because they were conditioned mentally by Yost and by Keen Fitzpatrick. Now, here's another one. I'm going to get to the one you ask about here, but anyway, okay. Rules knowledge. Now, you did some officiating for about 27 years, you say?
Yes, sir.
And did you witness any examples of students or of athletes who did not seem to know the rules and therefore were suffering a penalty because of it?
No, absolutely. There's a lot of I found this very interesting that Coach Yost did that, teaching them the rules, because it's probably would help almost every team out there at the high school and collegiate level of the players knowing the rules as well as the officials. And definitely helps the game go much smoother, and they can find advantages within the rules to gain over their opponents.
Yeah. And so they never lost games because of lack of knowledge of rules. And I got a good battle that they got into at 10. And you undoubtedly read that, where the Michigan gets bumped out of the Big Ten because mm-hmm. they don't want to go by some of the rules that have been in put in place by the faculty. And
right.
So they got to go east to find their opponents, and they play the Penn, and they Yost is up on the rules, and Penn is not. And he tells the officials, and the officials say, you know, Yost is right. And the Penn says, then we're not going to play. You can take your team and go home. We're not going to play. Okay. And so the officials come back to Yost and say, we've got a big problem here. They are just not, they refuse. If you say they cannot run that play that way, and I know that you're right, they're not going to play. Can we figure out a way to get the game going? And so Yost relents, you know, and they wind up playing the game. But the point is that, you know, he knew the rules better than the officials, for God's sakes. And he talked to the players. And there's some really interesting, there's a interesting photo in Coach Yost that where they're meeting at in the boarding house, and they're getting their food there. They got something there on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 5 days. And I've got the page. I forgot what page it's on. But anyway, I got all of the agenda. One night it was rules, and they had to come in with the written rules and quiz each other, and it had to be fast paced. You know, we move quick, and the game moves quick. So you got to make quick decisions correctly. I'm telling you, that's smart coaching. And when you know the rules that quickly, because you've rehearsed them, you know, you're just not going to make mistakes and give games away. And they didn't. And here's another one. Cross training. Now that one got me. No player would know. That almost true. Anyway, no player would know what position he was going to be playing, because Yost said, "You will play the position where you can help our team the most." And so it wasn't, you know, I'm going to come in, I'm going to play quarterback, I'm going to do this and that, because I'll get a lot of ink. They won't tell you that, but that's what they think. I'll get an awful lot of press and over there. No, that's I'm a receiver. No. You are. Where we can help our team the most. We are first and foremost team. And the other thing that did, you couldn't hurt them with an injury, and they were almost never injured. They really were in outstanding physical condition, outstanding in terms of training, in terms of mechanics, and they could play almost anywhere. So if you hit, somebody went down, somebody else was in. And the other thing too, now this is not one of the articles that I read in the Michigan Daily that impressed me was talking about eligibility. And sometimes when I know that this was true with Stagg at Chicago, he had some really good players, but he also had some players who refused to go to class. They weren't dumbbells; they were just lazy guys, and they could get by with it because Stagg would. Go to the professors, and of course he had a president who would back him up on anything he wanted to do, including getting faculty members to give people grades, because we got to have a football team that represents Chicago well. Well, when that whole thing was coming up and being discussed in the papers and at Michigan, the faculty athletic representative at Michigan said, "I can't remember once when Yost had a player who had conditions and had to work them off before he could get back to play, I can't remember once when he came and said, you've got to give him a better grade. He took the players that were available and played with them every single time. And the guys who were not academically eligible sat out until they got their conditions worked off and get back into play.
That's remarkable. That's quite a testament to the coach, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, now he got game participation. He was a perfectionist. My God, he knew more about what you wanted to do than you did if you were the opposing coach. He knew your players better than you knew them. And he taught his players to analyze the opponents. Now, there was never – the coach is the only one who can make decisions around here. You guys got to know. How tough is the guy over there? What can we do? Do you need to double up on one guy? What do you need to do? And make them think and continue to think. Of course, you get tremendous support from the paper, student paper, from the rallies. 4,000 students would come for a rally on a Friday night at was a university hall at first, and then became Hill Auditorium after that, when that structure was built. But they learned songs, cheers, and he would say all the right things to them. You know, he could hold that crowd of 4,000 students in the palm of his hand, where if he were quiet, taking sort of measured speech, they sat on the edge of their seat, waiting for the next word. he was the master of psychology.
Doctor, can I interject in here? You have a couple things where you show where Yost is in some uncomfortable positions, and he makes some statements that are really quite remarkable. The one you're saying with the point-a-minute teams when they were on that great winning streak that they had. And this isn't verbatim what he said, but he basically said it wasn't his job to stop his team from performing at their peak. That was his opponent's job to do.
Yeah.
I found that to be interesting. Sort of running up the score he was being questioned on, I guess.
Yeah. And see, his whole point was that this almost sounds like that. All I ask of you is everything. You know, love me for life. You know, that sort of thing. That's all I ask of you. That's beautiful music from Phantom of the Opera. That's all I ask of you, man, is that you give me 100% every single play in practice or in the game. That's all I ask. So the whole concept. You cannot take the day off. You can't take a play off. I need you every single play. Now, and he starts telling them this at the start of the season in spring training, in fall workouts. He starts telling them, we run people off the field. In the Iowa game, let's see, this is 1902, I think it is, yeah, in December. Now, they like to play, Michigan does, the final game in Chicago because you get a good crowd. So they're going to play with Iowa there. Iowa's going to be the final game of the season. I think Chicago is about game number 8 in that year. So they're going to play Iowa. Iowa's got a very good team, Michigan. Runs against Iowa 217 plays.
Wow.
it is just, when you talk, if we're going to be the kind of team that I want you to be, he says, we do not stop for people. We call the play while we're unscrambling from the previous play, so we know immediately, and the center has got to get right back where he can sap the ball, and anybody who's late getting back there is going to hold the whole team up. You got to get back and get in position. We're going to go and go and go. And it doesn't take very much for a team to And he's got them all sucking air on defense. His team is going wild. But anyway, that whole concept of being able to play any position, being able to play fast, and now what was your comment that brought this on? Maybe sparked me to go in this direction. What were you just saying about the
well, not he like had. Yeah, he says it wasn't his job to stop his team from performing at their peak, from running up the score against somebody. That's his opponent's job to stop his team from scoring.
And yeah, because all I can do is coach my team, and you see how I'm coaching my team? We are going to go. And he's in practice at Michigan. He's got them going up and down the field doing signal drills, and he's shouting, Hurry up. And the students nickname him Fielding Hurry Up Yost.
they found a new initial for the H, right? A new word for the H in his little name.
Yeah. And so then he loved it. He brings a smile from ear to ear for it to be called Hurry Up Yost. And trying to think where I was going to go next. Anyway, the concept of fast play. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to mention another statement that he made sort of on the other end of things when he was sort of in a sticky situation, uncomfortable situation. You have in the rare cases that he suffered a loss, his Michigan team suffered a loss, you have him quoted as saying, if you lose, don't find excuses, just congratulate the winners and move on. I thought that was a powerful message to his players.
And I've got a page in here where there's so many hurry ups. I didn't want to put them all in the book, but I've put ones that were pretty choice. And if you read those, if you're a coach or if you're a person who's working with youth sports, you look at that and you say, I want to use that. My kids should know this. One of them was, we don't have time to get even. So if there's been an unfairness in the last play, forget that, because the next play might be the one that wins the game for us.
Wow.
So, you hear that enough, you learn to be thick-skinned.
What words of wisdom that is, too. I mean, we could all probably use that in all walks of life, not just football.
Yeah, and then back to the coaching about the officiating. One of his hurry-ups was that you have not been assigned to referee this game. That's in someone else's hands. We have given you other assignments. You focus on yours. I'm thinking, I've seen so many, people, the teams out there where they're trying to show the official he's holding me, she's holding me, all that gets you is the disappointment of the officiating crew that you have to beg and beg and beg. For God's sakes, play the game, pal. Learn to play the game.
I think I bet you that's probably where Coach Bill Belichick in our modern times gets it, where he just tells his players, just do your job. That's all you have to do. Yeah. Just do your job. Don't worry about anything else. Just do your job.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I feel this is a part of Coach Yost's success formula, is that the respect he had for officials, I can tell, because I've watched enough sports events, I can tell. When a coach has an official who will not hurt him with his calls, you can just tell it. And you can tell when they're homers. Sometimes, if it's blatant, you can tell when they're homering for the basketball, they call a foul, the guy who's got four on him, and out he goes, and the game goes to the other team. You can see that stuff. He had such great rapport with the officials that they were proud to play, officiate his games. And he had enormous respect for the game. He did nothing. He could. Did you see some examples in the Coach Yost book of where he kind of got hosed at times? People, they go so fast. His team does. The only way we can stop him is a fake injury. So we do that. And so then he stuck. But there were a couple of really good examples of that I show in the book. And what did he do? Do you remember?
No, you got me stumped on that one.
Okay, all right. Iowa, back when he was at Kansas, and so they're feigning injury, and then finally they show up late for the game. It's an afternoon game, so they're going to run out of daylight, and they know they're going to go fast. So he has to argue every play. The coach says for Iowa has to argue every play and delay and delay and delay and delay, and finally comes out at the end of the game. All it says is Kansas is going to go back ahead, or not Kansas. I forget who. Maybe it's Nebraska. They're going to have a chance to go ahead in the game, and so he comes out and says it's too dark. We've got to quit. The Yost team got the short end of the stick there in several ways throughout the game. He shakes hands and goes home. He is not going to do anything that would bring discredit to the game. He's going to preach clean football and when it's over, it's over. That's a lesson that we can all learn from, I think.
And I think it's a good time to bring up another point that you say multiple times in the book, that in all those years of coaching, he never once said a curse word at a game or a practice. And I mean, that's unbelievable for what he was teaching, and these, men that are aggressive and doing aggressive actions and probably did some things that he didn't like, and never to have a poor choice of words that would offend anybody. I thought that was a remarkable attribute of Coach Yost.
He's really a classy guy, a braggart, my God, yes. And he just beats you to death because he's so much better than you are. But you don't even get a chance to lick your wounds, and he's already giving press releases and all. But so there's a lot of reasons to not like the guy. But no cuss words in the 26 years. I've been on coaching programs where I don't think the guys could go 26 minutes without cussing. And their feeling is that this is a part of the way you inspire athletes to do something difficult.
I know some coaches that can't go 26 words without saying a curse word.
Darren, you got it right. So that's a remarkable record. No one keeps records like that. And then also drinking. He was a teetotaler without question the whole time. Interesting guy. Really
very remarkable. Okay, now before I let you go, I want you to tell me in your own words. I mean, you've wrote a biography on this man twice, so you were the foremost expert, I think, on Fielding Yost that is around. That's ever been, probably, besides Fielding Yost himself. So, what is maybe the one quality, if you could just say one thing about Coach Yost to somebody to sort of sum him up? What would that be, or one story, however you want to sum it up?
First of all, he was a perfectionist. He left nothing to chance that he could influence in a positive way. He was remarkably flexible in his approach to the game. While people would come up with an offense that someone was doing really, especially someone in the East, Harvard, Yale, that they were doing really well, and then they'd just copy that. He didn't copy anybody. He was as innovative as they come. Looking back over his 29 years of coaching, four major traits, call them strengths if they will, can be seen in Coach Yost. They seem to be replicated in most high achievers in many different occupations. First, curiosity. Yost had an insatiable desire to learn. It drove him from a country schoolhouse to a law degree, from the East Coast to the far West, a trip he would eventually take 20 times, from his father's outfitting supply store to a deep understanding of mineral exploration, from preparing a young team for a football game to building a program that would produce national champions. He never stopped thinking and learning. Second, risk-taking. As a college athlete, Yost chose to test his athletic and mental skills against the best. He made mistakes. He learned from them. And incidentally, that's why risk-taking is so doggone important to high achievers, because you then learn how to handle defeat and come back in a different way, having learned more and overcome the loss. He chose an occupation, the hunt for veins of minerals, a business fraught with risk. Then he set about to learn enough to turn risk into profit. In setting a football schedule at Michigan, he loved the high-stakes big games. Third, preparation. He learned that his success was closely aligned with the thoroughness of his preparation. Fourth, charisma. Back in 1970, when Benny Ustron, Michigan's great, great All-American, read my manuscript of Yost, Yost had been his coach, I asked him, what was it about Coach Yost that you were most impressed with? He did not hesitate. He said, when Coach Yost entered the room, he had a commanding presence. He had charisma. When he put pen to paper, he made his ideas clear and convincing. His self-assurance moved our teams from we can do it in practice to we will do it by game time. Looking back on Coach Yost, he gave evidence of that leadership quality even in those early years, coaching years of I don't think I'm reading this now correctly. I'm getting a little bit in a hurry here. I think that's it. Curiosity, risk-taking, preparation, charisma.
Wow, that is really some great wisdom for coaching in any sport in any era that could be very valuable to anybody out there. And that, I think Coach Yost sort of learned that on the fly and from some great people that he was around and his great networking ability. And I'm going to get on my soapbox here for a little bit because your book is so filled with information about Coach Yost, but at the same time, it preserves such a great period in football history. And there are so many little stories and tangents that we could have gone on in this conversation. And I think I'll save that for your readers to get a copy of the book and get this. And once again, you can get that. It's called Coach Yost, Michigan's Tradition Maker, BEHEE.com. And he's got some information here where you can go to get the book. And you'll learn all these little stories and ins and outs, not only about Coach Yost, but some of the other aspects of football that goes into a lot with, like Coach Amos Alonzo Stagg and some rivalry he had with there. Just so many little stories that I'm going to treasure and probably read again here real soon, because it's just such a fascinating book. And I think the readers will find that excessively satisfying to their football appetite, as I have. And just one of those books is great. And Dr. Behe, I appreciate you coming on here and sharing with us this great story of Dr. Yost, and for sharing and writing this second book to give us this information on this great man in football history and preserving the football history. So thank you, sir.
You're welcome. And Darren, thank you for having me. And if we get some conversations going later on, you and I, there were some very interesting things that we need to talk about. First of all, that 1903 game, we had one of our students in Michigan who was really good at telegraphy. They telephone company built him a 40-foot tower near the 55-yard line, which was midfield, and he sent back information to the students gathered at the university in the hall, and they had 10 telephones. Well, anyway, it's really interesting how they got some play-by-play in 1903. And then we got sophisticated enough. One of the fellows on the Ohio State faculty in the 1910s and 15s came up with a grid graph. It's a big football clock. And it had all kinds of information on it, like game scoreboards today. And that thing was, it had about 4,000 students sitting there watching that game. They couldn't get up to Minneapolis, Minnesota to play, to see the game. So there were a number of things there that were, I think were really interesting that would surprise people, did not know that those were innovations were.
We will definitely have you on again. And,
we can do some other things for your listeners.
Okay, I find that
they got to get that Coach Yost book.
that's for sure. Doctor, thank you once again, and we will talk to you again real soon. I'll get you on another podcast here.
Thanks, Darren.
That was a great conversation we had with Dr. John Behe, a great biographer. Second time around writing about Coach Yost, Michigan's Tradition Makers, the name of the book. You can get it at behe.com, BEHE.com. You can look for the links here in the show notes or go on pigskindispatch.com to any one of the three parts that we've had with Dr. John Behe talking about his Coach Yost book and the great coach and part of football history, and some of the traditions that Michigan has are traditions that are carried on through all of football, even to this day, some 100 odd years later. So a great book, great conversation, and we thank Dr. Behe once again, and hope to have him on again real soon here on Pigskin Dispatch. So till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.